This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Corporate Service Supply and Manufacturing, a DJI Enterprise dealer providing DJI equipment and support for law enforcement, public safety, construction, and other commercial users of unmanned aerial systems. To learn more, visit the uavdigest.com/css. And by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the uavdigest.com/goengineer. You're listening to episode 260 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Hello, everyone. I survived the great flood. We actually had this large golden orb over my house today. I don't know, really not sure what it is, but evidently the weather's good enough to fly drones, so that's a good thing. So what do you think, Max? You think we got a good show tonight?
Yeah, interesting stories kind of run the gamut here. I think folks will find these interesting.
Let's see. We've got a drone startup fails. We knew that these were good. This is probably the beginning of a long set of stories like that. Chinese drone companies aren't playing nice. Fuel cell powered quadcopter launches. You can tell who put that story in, folks. Defibrillator delivery by drone done. Yes, he made all of that deliberation, so I would actually see if I get it right. Insurance drones take to the skies. That one I'm not sure I should be talking about. And a missing woman located by drone. No, folks, that's not a new pickup service. So with that, I think we should get started.
I think we better.
Well, our first story comes from TechCrunch.com. Drone startup Airware crashes, shuts down after burning $118 million. Without advance notice, Airware told employees it was immediately shutting down. This is kind of amazing, Max. What do you think?
Well, the title says they burned through their investment capital, and they were just not being successful. They tried to manufacture their own hardware, but you know, you've got DJI and a few other Chinese companies out there, and it is tough to compete with them, at least on the hardware side. And Airware just wasn't able to hack it.
So there's now 140 employees that are out of a job.
Last week we were talking about drone industry consolidation. And part of the shakeout that you can typically see in new industries like this is not only consolidation, but also some companies exiting the industry. And yeah, I think that Airware is one, but there may be others. Some will survive by consolidation and some just won't be able to make it. I haven't heard any more details about what Airware plans to do. Are they going to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy and reorganize, or is it just simply the doors are shut and investors are out of their money and employees are out of a job? You know, it's got to be really hard if you're an employee in a company that does this. I think sometimes you hear, you know, it's cruel that they were just told on the day that this is it, go home, you're out of work. But it can be difficult to give kind of advance notice of that, you know, if you know you're going to shut down, because then people start, you know, behaving in odd ways. But it has worked with other companies in the past, but quite often you see something like this, just bang, all of a sudden, out of business.
Which is why you and I chose to work for multi-billion dollar corporations. But that doesn't mean anything. People get laid off all the time. I think we're going to see that this industry is going to be a little bit like the tech industry in the 90s. There will be some colossal failures because it's such a changing environment, and a lot of startups and a lot of people who, and this was back in when with the tech failures, there were a lot of people running companies who shouldn't have been running companies, but were running companies because they were able to deal with the tech. Just because you're a really good drone designer or engineer, maybe doesn't necessarily mean that you're a sound business manager or a planner. So those companies that are going to survive are going to be the ones that realize that not everybody's capable of doing everything. So we'll keep following up to see where they're going with this. But I think it's the beginning of something we'll be talking about a lot more in the upcoming months and years, besides consolidation, which would be just companies exiting the businesses. But we talked about DJI being a powerhouse. And this is from globaltimes.cn. Chinese
netizens.
Okay, you take this title.
Chinese netizens furious as homegrown drone companies sue each other in the United States. Well, Autel Robotics filed a formal complaint against DJI. They filed it with the United States International Trade Commission, the ITC, claiming that DJI infringed on two Autel patents. And Autel asked the ITC to ban all DJI products from being imported into the U.S. Well, that got mentioned in China in the Ministry of Commerce's Trade Remedy and Investigation Bureau. There was a published a statement regarding this complaint. And then Chinese social media went crazy thinking Autel was a U.S. company. It was a matter of here the U.S. again is attacking DJI and, you know, unfair trade and all this. The problem is they got it wrong. They got it backwards.
It is kind of funny that the Chinese company is suing the Chinese company using American legal remedies. But I guess DJI's largest market is the United States. So if you're going to try to hurt a company, you might as well hurt them in their biggest marketplace. Autel, on September 10th, we're recording this on the 20th, issued a semi-apology. Quote, the lawsuit has nothing to do with the China-U.S. trade war, although we didn't think carefully of the timing, says an Autel representative told domestic news site Jimnan.com?
Close enough. Yeah. Then the story gets then even crazier in a way, because when the folks in China realized that this was a Chinese company suing another Chinese company, not a U.S. company suing a Chinese company, they redirected their ire away from the United States and towards Autel. Some of them even referred to Autel as being traitors. I think that it's part of the business culture there, the culture there that, you know, you stand with your fellow countrymen in their economic activities. But folks didn't like this at all. So the hue and cry, you know, rose again, this time directed towards Autel. It's an interesting story. It's sort of a cultural story in a way, David, but what we don't know at this point is what is the International Trade Commission going to do with this claim that DJI infringed on their on the patents of Autel. So it's, you know, again, another story that we'll be eager to follow.
I'm assuming, and maybe, and I don't remember seeing this, Were the patents actually filed in the United States or were they filed in China?
Good question. Don't know, at least not from the articles I've seen so far. Yeah, there's a lot of detail to the story that hasn't really come out yet. And I'm eager to learn it when it does get made public.
He's going to like that one. He likes articles where I have trouble pronouncing words. Like B-Shark launches a new hydrogen-powered drone. Welcome to the fuel cell portion of the show, written by Max Flight. CommercialDrone.com. B-Shark and Micro Multicopter, MMC, have partnered on a hydrogen-powered quadcopter called the Narwhal 2. It sounds a little bit unicornish to me.
This is an aluminum-framed foldable design, and it uses an 800-watt metal-based PEM fuel cell. PEM is it can either stand for polymer electrolyte membrane, or sometimes it's called a proton exchange membrane. It's the same thing, I think. But that type of fuel cell uses hydrogen and oxygen from the air to produce the electricity. And in this case, the hydrogen is stored in a cylinder. It's a 3.5-liter carbon fiber cylinder. It's covered with an aluminum alloy. They say it's good for at least 500 fillings. Last week, we talked about folks in Singapore working on a hydrogen fuel cell, and they had some difficulties with a pressure vessel, a cylinder to contain the hydrogen, but these folks are using that. But what you get with a hydrogen cell is, of course, extended range because the thing continues to generate electricity for some period of time. And in this case, B-Shark says that the Narwhal 2 is good for a 2-hour flight time. And the other thing they do with this is think that, well, okay, if you've got a 2-hour flight time, that could be some serious beyond visual line of sight. So you need to have a communication system with sufficient range. So the transmitters on this have a 30-kilometer range.
You know, I was thinking about this the other day after we hung up about, you know, fuel cells. The nice thing about fuel, as you convert the hydrogen and the oxygen into electricity, your payload gets lighter. So like all vehicles, the farther you go, the lighter your aircraft will be, so you've got better range. However, this is not going to be a quadcopter that you're going to go out and buy unless you're very, very independently wealthy. Us podcasters, it's out of our price range at $6,800 for the fuel cell and drone. This is definitely another vehicle that's designed for the pro market or the professional market, not necessarily for the consumer.
Right. At least at this point, I don't know if pricing is on a trajectory to come down to more consumer levels or not. But I did find a really interesting article on UAV Coach that's titled, "Will Hydrogen Fuel the Drones of the Future? 7 Benefits of Hydrogen Over LiPo Drones." And it's at a pretty high level, but they talk about the benefits of fueling drones with hydrogen. They talk about it being a clean energy source, colorless, odorless, non-toxic gas, no harmful emissions. In a hydrogen fuel cell, the byproduct is water, and that doesn't generally hurt the environment. They also say that there's a lot of hydrogen around. In fact, hydrogen is the most abundant element, not just on the Earth, but in the universe. There's lots of hydrogen around. They talk about the energy density. Hydrogen fuel cells have a higher energy density than batteries. That hydrogen fuel cells enable longer flight times, partly because they have a higher energy density, but also because batteries store energy and then deliver it over time. Fuel cells generate the electricity as you go along. They also talk about, this is a really important one, hydrogen fuel cells refuel quickly. And it hasn't been so easy in the past, but they mentioned this B-Shark product, the Orca 1. sort of a trend here in the B-Shark naming conventions. It's a mobile hydrogen refueling station. And with that, you can actually refuel the hydrogen at home. Another advantage they mention is that hydrogen fuel cells can operate at low temperatures. They don't suffer from the effects on batteries and electrics of low temperatures. And then finally, they note that beyond visual line of sights are more easily attainable with hydrogen-fueled drones than with batteries. So it's an interesting little article. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. And again, that's from UAVcoach.com.
Well, let's move on to the important things. This week in FAA News. Dun, 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 dun. This is actually from thedrive.com. And it's actually an update to something we've talked about previously, which is drone delivery company conducts City of Reno's first FAA-approved multi-drone flight. Flirty, we know, who is everybody's favorite pharmaceutical delivery drone company, conducted the first official drone flights in Reno, Nevada, under the FAA's Unmanned Aircraft Systems Integration Pilot Program. We've talked about the pilot program and the fact that it's the FAA letting the business world do all the experimentation and doing the guidance. So it was a simulated delivery of external defibrillators, a single operator simultaneously piloted multiple Flirty drones. That's really neat that you've got one operator using multiple drones going in multiple directions and able to control them. It's not something we've been thinking about, that a single operator with multiple vehicles. We always think multiple operators for a single vehicle. So what do you think, Max? Flirty is definitely the bleeding edge of delivery.
Yeah, they have been. They've been in the press a lot over the last couple of years with different programs. And I think it's great that they're involved in this pilot program. A lot of attention, government and industry as well. But they're very optimistic about when this kind of delivery service could be practical or could be allowed under regulation. The CEO of Flirty, Matt Sweeney, said that this program runs us through the end of 2020. So we expect that we'll be regularly saving lives and improving consumer lifestyles through drone delivery in Reno even before that. He says we're talking less than 24 months. So I think Reno is very receptive to this. I think the local folks in Reno are very excited about being part of this program. And if we can see deliveries of these kinds of medical products and supplies and things in less than 24 months, I think that'd be just wonderful.
Defibrillators are a time-sensitive item. So, and the pharmaceutical seems to be the right kind of niche, it seems like, for drone delivery, at least to start out.
Yeah, because who's going to argue with that, right? I mean, who's going to say, no, let's not save lives or get the medical supplies where they need to be. It's hard to be against that. It's easier to be against somebody, who's getting their toothpaste and their toilet paper delivered by drone and making a lot of racket. But ambulances make a lot of noise, and we generally recognize that the purpose served is good.
Not to mention logistically, medicals and blood supplies and et cetera are not all that heavy. It seems to be a sweet spot for drone delivery, and good to Flirty for pushing on. I'm sure we're going to start talking about them even more in the future.
Well, David, the AMA is talking in the present, aren't they?
They are. They want a risk-based approach for recreational regulations essential to the upcoming FAA reauthorization. Well, I guess for those who don't listen haven't listened in the past, we have the FAA reauthorization bill up due, and that's when Congress gives the money for the FAA to do what they need to do. But part of that reauthorization bill is usually they kind of direct the FAA on how they want to handle regulation. The last FAA reauthorization bill has been in a tumult because of privatization of ATC. But also, drone delivery has been a big important aspect, and drone regulation. And the Academy of Model Aeronautics isn't really happy with the way they want to handle model airplanes as well as drones.
Right. The AMA is concerned about the special rule for model aircraft. That's Section 336. Of course, that's the section that carves out model airplanes from the FAA's jurisdiction. And the AMA is also concerned about any remote ID requirements for model airplanes. They just don't want to see those kinds of burdens placed on airplane modelers who are, you know, building small aircraft that are adequately covered by existing processes. And I think that's a valid kind of concern. It just seems to me that, you know, there's a class, sometimes they're referred to as micro UAVs or micro drones, something of a certain size below which we just don't worry about regulations and registrations and certifications and all that. Now, what do you think, David?
I had a large argument with Linda Elliman about this back when I was down in Baltimore for the FAA seminar. I still don't know. I admire the AMA. I've been a member. It's important. I understand also that, you know, the airspace that the AMA flies in now is going to be a professional airspace and drones. And I still have mixed emotions about both ways. You know, I understand the AMA says, well, our members follow our regulations and they're stricter than the FAA, and the FAA and anybody else who's in a business person who's going to be flying drones for business goes, well, that's not fair that we have to track and locate and register all of our equipment and we're flying in the same airspace they are. So it all boils down to there needs to be a congressional reauthorization for the FAA. So I guess I'd like to open it up to our listeners. Send an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com. Whether you're pro AMA and non-registering model aircraft, or believe that, you know, they're flying in the national airspace and they should be subject to the same regulations that everybody else is. So what do you think, Max?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I'd love to hear what you all listening think about this issue. If you want to hear in more detail what the AMA is saying right now, which is not, they're not calling for an all-out campaign to legislators, but they are asking members to, you know, voice their concerns, make their thoughts known, at least on a sort of a low level. But if you look in the show notes for this episode at theuavdigest.com/260, there is a brief video from the AMA which describes where they're coming from on this and invites you to take a look at that.
And let's move from one aspect of the IPP, or the Integration Pilot Program, to another. And this is from State Farm. And at this point, the insurance agent of the show is going to turn it over to his co-host.
This is a press release from State Farm. New waiver for drone operations over populated areas to help State Farm respond to damage in states impacted by Hurricane Florence. Now, if you're outside the U.S., you may not have heard, but there was this rather large hurricane that came through a number of states in the southeast that basically kind of stalled, slowed down to just a crawl, and continued to dump a lot of rain there. And so there's a lot of flooding, and it's a real mess. Well, State Farm, which is an insurance company, was granted a waiver by the FAA to fly drones in four states, and they're allowed under this waiver to fly over people and to fly beyond visual line of sight. Now, of course, State Farm is going to use these drones and this waiver to do damage assessment and speed up the process of processing claims and all of that. And State Farm says that this waiver is the first of its kind for an insurance company. There's a senior vice president at State Farm, Robert Yee, says State Farm needs to quickly assess damage after significant weather events. Drone technology provides us with the capability to quickly deploy over a catastrophe site and assess damage from the air. The data we obtain from drone flights can be used to help us determine the severity of damage. This also allows us to place our claims team on the ground and evaluate uninhabitable insured property. I think this is a great, a great application for drones, and I'm glad that they were able to receive a waiver for this. Now, State Farm is, speaking of the integration pilot program, State Farm is an interested party with the Virginia Tech Mid-Atlantic Aviation Partnership. And so they have some experience at this through that. So I think this is great. I think this is maybe not the first time that drones have been used by insurance companies, but on this scale and with the conditions that are allowed under the waiver, I think this is an opportunity for some really great stuff to happen.
Yeah. Congratulations to State Farm.
Yeah. Yeah.
But more to the point, congratulations for the FAA for authorizing it and realizing the importance of it. So, and hopefully there'll be a lot of important lessons learned from this topic. So, last but not least, how to find a woman with a drone. In this case, this was from Wayne.com. A 78-year-old woman with dementia who was lost in Pokegon State Park in Indiana. Thank you for the pronunciation there, boss. A drone was located. Team spent 11 hours searching 1,300 acres. Then a drone officer, Chief Pilot Deputy Schaefer Baker, a Noble County Sheriff's Department, flew his drone, and she was found within 30 minutes. The drone has a heat signature sensor, and Baker had said a ground search would have taken days, and using a DJI Inspire. So you've got 11 hours searching 1,300 acres, and a drone using a thermal imager could find her in 30 minutes. Luckily, the woman was found safe and is home doing well, but really good use of search and rescue and someone who was trained and understands the procedures, being a police officer or Deputy Schaefer Baker, was able to integrate. We talked about this last week about integrating and properly integrating in with the first responders. In this case, he was a first responder, so he could actually integrate and talk about his capabilities. So really good way to end the show on a drones for good story.
Yeah, absolutely. This is definitely a feel-good kind of a story, and it's wonderful to be able to bring to you examples like that. Well, you've been listening to episode 260 of the UAV Digest. We want to thank you for that. You can find us at the uavdigest.com. And if you'd like to go to the show notes for this episode, see some of the videos that we have associated with the articles, find that at the uavdigest.com/260.
And of course, we shower the world to bring you the constant variety of social media. You can find us on Twitter at uavdigest, on Facebook at facebook.com/theUAVDigest. You can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store. You, of course, can really help us by leaving some feedback at feedback@theUAVDigest.com or on Stitcher or Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts. Leave a review. Tell the world that you like the show so other people can find us. And we really would like you to become part of our Slack listener team, where you can join in the conversation and where we get a lot of our stories from. They keep us up to date, and they're kind of our research staff. So we appreciate them. And you can do that by sending an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com. And you should always tell your friends. And if you can't remember theuavdigest.com, and I know a certain NASA historian who has that trouble, you can now go to uavdigest.com. We actually finally purchased that domain name. Or you can go to dronepodcast.com. So use any of those to tell your friends so they can find out more about us. So I guess with that, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.